Welcome to Dentology, the Business of Dentistry podcast. In this podcast, we delve into the non-clinical aspects of dentistry with inspirational guests from across the profession. You will hear incredible life stories, pick up valuable business tips, and be entertained. I'm Andy Acton, and I'm joined by my co-host, Chris Drevens.
Nathan's a very, very enjoyable guy to talk to, isn't he?
So lucky. Don't you love that? Like, we should call him Kylie.
I think on the
sorry, Kylie Minogue, for those of you who are very young.
I think on the luckyometer, we must have hit eight or nine, but I genuinely believe that the formula of opportunity plus preparation was lucky. And in all the things he's described, all the things he's doing, he has an eye if there's an opportunity. And he is prepared.
I think he's also, what I loved about it was he's the new practice. It is actually about care. It's about caring for dentists. And I think, for patients. And I think what will happen is he's going to be one of those lovely people. You know, the people who we always say money follows the event. You sort of feel he's going to have done the event. And the money will follow.
Yeah, he's doing it with a very good spirit.
Yeah, he's not doing it to make wish.
In terms of why he's doing it.
I think he's a lovely guy, nice guy.
Yeah, really enjoyable. Okay, well, that's good. Really enjoyed it. If you enjoyed this episode, please do subscribe. That'd be great. We produce episodes every week.
We do.
And they come out every Monday at 7 o'clock in the morning. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
So, another episode coming our way.
It is indeed. Here we are. Business of dentistry.
It is. And
dun, 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 drum roll.
This week, we are stretching across the border. We are heading to South Wales. And today we are joined by Nathan Welch. And Nathan is a dentist, has a PG cert in orthodontics, the co-principal at Ebon Fine Dental Care in Cowbridge. I hope I've got the pronunciation correct.
But I'll probably get
chastised by Welsh people all over the place.
Cowbridge. I've been to Cowbridge.
Yeah, beautiful place. Nice, yeah. And also building another practice as we record. So he's a man with a lot going on, and he's married, and he's got kids. There's lots of plates that are spinning. Welcome, Nathan, how are you doing?
Yeah, really good. Nice to meet you guys this morning.
Brilliant. Yeah,
there are a lot of plates spinning at the moment.
Yeah.
Although I think we said before, there's that phrase, isn't there, that if you want something done, ask a busy person. And there's no doubt that I think as life moves on and more things come your way and there's more plates spinning, we do have that innate ability to somehow cope. We're just able to take more and more on.
Yeah, I think that's true. The more you have to do, you just have to get it done. There's no option.
That's right. Just make sure you don't collapse at the end of it.
Exactly. You've got a little bit of energy left for some fun. Before we get into your dental career, and clearly there's a lot to chew through today, can we kind of go back to the beginning and just get a sense of, you know, your upbringing? You know, what did your parents instill in you? How did they kind of fold you so you're the person you are today?
Well, I'm from Cornwall originally. I'm not from Wales, but I did move here for uni. But yeah, I loved living in Cornwall. We live right by the beach.
You're a surfer dude, Nathan?
I was. I'm a bit old, a bit fat now, you know.
but I think once a surfer dude, always a surfer dude, though, aren't you?
I loved the beach. Before I started doing dentistry, I was a beach lifeguard. Did that for several summers. So, yeah, excellent. I lived on the beach, really. I was always good at school, got good grades, more by luck than hard work at school, I think. Dad worked as a teacher, so I think he instilled sort of good learning in me at home. And I didn't really know what I wanted to do. I'd probably have been quite happy being a beach lifeguard forever, but, you know, although
you could have gone to Bondi or something
and then make a profession. And
I guess David Hasselhoff had that job, didn't he?
Yeah. I had really good advice at school from our sixth form tutor. And he said, look, you know, you've got the grades, you could go and do basically anything you want. We'd recommend doing medicine or dentistry. And I didn't really want to do medicine. I never wanted to work in a hospital. I never wanted to work any night shifts at all. I'd have been absolutely useless working at night. Hats off to those that do, that can work one night, sleep in the day, and then sleep the night the next day and get up in the day. I just couldn't do that to myself. Right. So I said, all right, yeah, I'll apply to do dentistry, sort of on a whim. I did do a little bit of work experience at the local dentist by me. Thought, oh, yeah, that seems all right, a job. Applied to four universities and got offers and chose Cardiff because when I went to interview, really liked Cardiff as a city. Really liked the dental school, and the staff there seemed really friendly. So I put them as my top choice. Got in, moved to Cardiff in 2005. Studied in dental school there. Came out, went into a position, an NHS position after VT up in the valleys in Merthyr. Stayed there for nearly 10 years then, actually. Quite happily working as an associate. I had another job on the, another associate job on the side, but that was my main job. And then that got taken over by a corporate, and that was, there was a little bit of a falling out, and that sort of gave me a push to change that job. And then I sort of flitted about a bit. I changed my other job as well. And then eventually came to own the practice that that I worked at in one of them, and then things have spiraled from there, really.
Wow. Wow. And no dentists or medics in the family?
None at all, no.
Oh, okay.
It's interesting. Going back to your careers advice at school, did the sixth form tutor, did they kind of quickly jump to medicine and dentistry? Were there other options and avenues? Did you explore other kind of, you know, non-healthcare professions, or did it kind of become dental quite quickly?
Yeah, I actually did a weeks-long residential for engineering at Cambridge University. I think that was in lower sick form, and I actually didn't like it at all. Although I had the grades to go and do engineering, I decided that that wasn't for me, actually.
Wow. Yeah, yeah. It's just, and given the way things have panned out, do you think that was good careers advice? Would you choose dentistry again if you could go back to being 17-year-old Nathan?
I think I would. I moan about it a lot, but who doesn't moan about their job, right? There's no ideal job. You know, there's a surfer, Kelly Slater, and he said the worst thing you can do, I'm paraphrasing, but the worst thing you can do is do something you love as your job, because you will fall out of love with it.
I think you're right. And I think the other side is that until you're immersed in it and you're completely immersed in dentistry, you don't see it from every dimension. And when you look at other people's lives or other people's careers or jobs or whatever, we kind of only see the bit that they show us. So quite often other things can look more interesting.
And
more
I think
exciting.
You adapt, don't you?
Yeah.
Also, because there's bits in every job that you don't necessarily really like. And there's other bits that you can say, oh, I really like this bit. So even if the in totality, you look at the whole job, you know, part of it might be you just love talking to people.
Yeah.
Well, that's a really important part of dentistry. It might be you love the clinical, you know, fiddly bit. Well, that's really part of dentistry. I think the fact you can almost make it what you want. I think you're right, Nathan. The danger is you sort of like almost diss the whole thing and sort of forget the good bits and not focus on the not so good bits.
You kind of skiffled through your sort of dental school experience quite quickly. You were obviously a smart kid at school. Did you find...
No, lucky, you said. And I love the phrase of lucky, because you don't get lucky, I tell you. I think you have to work reasonably hard to be lucky.
Well,
I've got
9A stars now.
I was just lucky. I just turned up.
But what was dental school like for you? Did you find that equally, you know, from a kind of clinical, technical point of view, was it quite easy for you to grasp, or were there challenges on that side? What was the whole experience like at dental school?
I found it difficult. It was definitely sort of a learning curve of how difficult it was to learn the sort of academic material. The hands-on bit, that always came fairly naturally, but the sort of high-level reading and stuff, I really struggled with that. That was a step up from sick form that I wasn't really prepared for. I had to be quite disciplined with myself, and I'm very easily distracted.
Right. Yeah.
Oh, okay. Have you always been really good with your hands? You know, in sort of like doing stuff. Did you like do models or making?
Yeah, I guess I did. Yeah.
You know, taking an engine to pieces or something and just putting it back together because you thought, hey, why not?
Yeah, I mean, I've never taken an engine apart, but yeah, I used to like doing models and things like that.
Yeah. I think that's the thing that I always found fascinating about dentistry is that it's incredibly complicated, but also you not only have to have the brain power to be able to do it, because you have to identify what's going on, but you also have to have the mechanical skills to be able to do it. And I think that's a fascinating blend of people, which is why sometimes we can see, as you will know, some dentists who are really good at the mechanical bit, but not so good at the communication bit.
Yeah.
It's fascinating.
Like you say, there's lots of elements, you know, over the years. Obviously, we see and talk to lots of dentists through our other job, kind of valuing and selling dental practices. And I always find it fascinating how you can see people who are amazing people. They're really likable and have a phenomenal business. And we're not clinical at all, but we hear from other dentists that they're not the best clinically, yet they have a really successful business. Then you have other people who might be professors and yeah, clinically they are world renowned, but they could never make business work. And yeah, having a sweet spot where you can kind of put a tick,
yeah, definitely,
in every box, but it's not necessarily a massive tick, it's just a tick.
Definitely,
so you're,
yeah,
good enough in each category. I think from a business ownership, yeah, yeah, point of view, that those people tend to do.
We sort of say, who would you want to have a drink with, don't we?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
It's definitely that. You can't be good at one aspect of it if you want to run a practice, I don't think. Or you need someone else who's not sat next to me, yeah, but, you know, Lara, who you've met, Andy, my wife, she's, yes, a dentist as well, and she is fantastic. She's a fantastic dentist and clinician as well, but she's much better at admin and things like that than I am.
Mm. Mm. Yeah, I think you need to have those mutual skills, don't you, running a business? Otherwise, oh, yeah, if you're all both the same, it's a bit of, yeah, a disaster, really.
And I must admit, I'm always in awe of sole principals or people who run a business, yeah, on their own. Yeah. I think the responsibility, and you need to be good at so many things. It's, yeah, it's so incredibly hard. I think a partnership, whether it's business partners, mm, husband and wife, whatever that setup is, it just means that you can lean into the bits that you're strong at. And like you say, if Lara's great with people, then, you know, not to say, mm, you're not, but if, yeah, that's just, if she's, definitely, strong in that area than you, then, mm, why wouldn't she take that over? So that,
and
that
you need to download, well, don't you? I remember when we bought the business, whatever, 23 years ago. Yeah. So I originally was in the business to start with. Mm-hmm. And Andy, bless him, yeah, I would say virtually every day, wouldn't you say, every day?
We had a debrief.
Every day on our way home driving, I would tell Andy about the day, yeah, normally how annoying it was. And it was, we used to say, if you were on your own, could you download that to? Whereas, yeah, I was so lucky to have Andy to be able to download it too.
Yeah.
I've got a friend who bought practice very close in time to us, I think 3 months maybe before we took over Cowbridge, and it is his wife is non-dental and she doesn't work in the company, and I know for a fact he misses what me and Lara have, yeah, being able, right, to talk about the business together and make joint, yeah, decisions, because, mm, like you've just said, if you are a sole principal, it's lonely at the top.
Mm. Mm. Yeah, very, mm, yeah, very, definitely, lonely.
So take us back to the fact of you sort of were associate for a while, and then it's sort of like you yet again glossed over there, well, and we just bought the practice I was in. So how did that sort of occur?
So two things happened concurrently. So I had two associate jobs, and one of them got taken over by a corporate, and I was looking for a new job, sort of looking, but my friends knew I was looking. They own a dental practice as well, and they said, look, we're looking for a member of staff, can you come and work for us? I said, you know, I could do. It was a bit of a pay cut from where I was. The UDA value wasn't as good. And I thought, I'm going to have to make up that somehow. And I knew they used to do dental foundation training. And it's something that I had wanted to do, but just hadn't had time to do before. So I thought, right, well, that'll fill in the void of my wages. And it'll be something that I'd wanted to do for a while. So I said, look, I'll come and work for you with the proviso we can apply for dental foundation training. They were like, yeah, that's great. There's space if you get it. Then we can, you know, do up an old surgery and the foundation dentist can go there. So that was great. I said, right, I'll hand him a notice here. And then I did all the training for the additional training I needed to do to be an educational supervisor for dental foundation training. Got that luck. Again, I people say, you're just a lucky kid. Anyway, got that on my first application. And yeah,
you might have to call this episode, he's not lucky.
Oh, yeah.
So I got that. And actually, I've absolutely loved doing that. So in that associate role, I've been educational supervisor as well. And I've had three foundation dentists come through where I've mentored them now. And actually, that's probably one of the most rewarding things I've done in my career. Although I'm not doing it next year because I just haven't got the time. That's been amazing. So if anyone has been thinking about that, I would recommend sort of getting involved in dental foundation training. The youngsters coming out, they really keep you on your toes. You know, they'll keep you in mind when you're having a rough day. They'll come in and they'll pick your brain. And when they leave, you think, yeah, my life's all right. So we're talking about the smallest things, and you're like, what? If this is all they've got to worry about, what am I worrying about? You know, just come on.
It's quite a good one. It's a bit of a grounder, really, isn't it?
Exactly. Having the benefit of the younger dentists come kind of through and train them, what's your take on what your dental experience is like in terms of when you got spewed out into the dental world to treat patients compared to the young people who are graduating today? Are they better equipped, not as equipped as well?
They are definitely not as equipped, and they would be open to tell you that themselves. I've only had them since post-COVID, okay? So the first one I had was during COVID. It was 2020. And he had a pretty rough undergraduate curriculum, like he hardly saw any patients. But that seems to have become almost the norm at the dental hospital. They're coming out. They've done very little clinical work. They've done a lot of, you know, what's it called? Like written work and learned work.
Lots of theory and stuff.
Hundreds of hours on litigation. But what they don't do is hundreds of hours of hands-on work on patients. And they're coming out. They might have only done half a root canal. The one I've had this year, it did two halves of a root canal. So that's not enough clinical experience to be released into the world, in my opinion. But
no.
But it's crazy, isn't it? They're like a piece of plasticine,
and you just got to take them and mould them in.
But they're spending hundreds of hours on litigation. We spoke to Jason Wong last week, the CDO, and he was saying, and we were talking about kind of, you know, the risks of litigation and the challenges of dentists. And like he was saying, you are not going to get struck off for taking out the wrong tooth. You know, people that get struck off for taking out the wrong tooth, it wasn't that. It was that they hid the error or they misdirected people or deceived.
Exactly
it wasn't
that.
Necessarily that. So it's heartbreaking to hear that so much time has been spent on litigation and protecting dentists when in the real world, as long as you're doing the right thing, but you're doing things the right way, I think the profession will support you. So it just seems that we're spending a lot, or the young dentists are spending a lot of time working on something which you're almost kind of building fear from day one.
It's a real interesting one, isn't it? Because as Jason said and you just said, and we see and, you know, we hear at those meetings we go to, it's obviously, it must be almost like the number one thing that young dentists are scared of is this being sued and losing their livelihood. And that's got to change, hasn't it, really? Because otherwise you're either not going to get people into the profession, or you're going to get people who will only do, you know, I'm going to be a one-trick pony. I'm going to do this. I mean, we were talking to some, do you know, was that guy, I can't remember, some guy, and he said, his foundation dentist had never done an extraction. Yeah. And he said it was nuts, you know. He said, you know, they were quite happy doing, I think, an incisor or one of these, whatever these are, but they'd never, ever attempted a molar. And he was saying, you know, it's mad. You've got these people coming out who haven't had the clinical time, but they can write really good notes.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, their notes. So one of the foundation dentists, I had to give her an hour at the end of each day just to finish off her notes, and she was still running late. Some of the days she was still there at 6:30, 7 o'clock.
Wow.
And I, you know, I just said to her, you've got to go home. She's like, I've got to get my notes done. I'm like, I know you've got to get your notes done, but there's a happy medium somewhere.
Do you think these, and this is just a one thing about you, do you think these oral, you know, dictation things, will they help, you know, where people can actually just say what they've
done? I've never used one, but I think, yes, if they come in then and they are good, then that could definitely help people.
Because we used to have an interest.
You know, help everyone.
We used to have an interest in a law firm, didn't we? And when they first came out, do you remember, was it called Dragon or something? Yeah. It was absolutely shocking, especially if he had an accent that wasn't like a perceived English or whatever they call it.
Yeah.
And then it's been getting much, much better. Because I think if you could do that verbally, then that's got to be better than writing notes or whatever. Because at least you could almost do it as you were doing the consultation, couldn't you?
Probably in real time.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. So you bought your practice back in 2021? Is that right?
Yeah, 2021.
Back end of 21.
Yeah.
So can you just describe just what that practice looks like? Because I think it's an interesting makeup.
Yeah, so that's actually that's not the one where I'm foundation trainer. That was my other job. So it's 5 minutes from my house. And I'd been working there for about 3 years, but I'd actually been working for the owners for about 7 years because they It's a convoluted story, but I'll try and explain it. So the practice was owned by my ex-boss. He sold it to a corporate going back, I don't know, 15 years ago or something like that. They got sold to another corporate. They ran it into the ground. My old ex-boss then bought his own practice back at a fraction of the cost that he sold it for. And he, when they took over, most of the staff left to stay with the corporate, I think. And they bought me in from the other practice that I was working at, which was very kind of them because it was much closer to my house. So it was saving me sort of 45 minutes each way. So that was a massive time saving for me.
You might even say lucky. Under them.
What'd you say, Andy?
you might even say lucky.
Lucky, yeah. You know.
this bloke is so. What do you reckon are the lottery numbers for Saturday?
So I worked under them there for I think 3 years, and then COVID hit, and it was never. They were already struggling profitability wise, and they had three practices then during COVID, and I think it was just too much to shoulder that loss, and they sort of said, look. We need out of this one. Do you want to buy it? Or if not, we're going to have to sell it anyway. So I said, well, look, don't sell it to anyone. Let me have a little think, because I'd been in a position where I'd been sold out to a corporate before and it left me quite unhappy. And I spoke to Lara and she was like, well, it wasn't really on our radar to buy a practice, but yeah, we could probably do it. So we spoke to the bank and, you know, you get some advice. We decided to go for it. They wanted a quick sale and we tried to push for a quick sale, but I think in dentistry, there's no such thing as a quick sale.
No, as soon as you involve lawyers. Learning,
you know. It took almost a best part of a year to go through. Yeah. And it was a lot of stress. It strained that relationship between me and the other two principals that were there before. You know, it's all okay, but it was definitely, it put a strain on that relationship while we were trying to take over.
Yeah. Did you have anyone acting as an intermediary, or was it just you and the seller, the in direct communication?
Yeah. Direct communication, yeah.
It's a tricky one, isn't it? We quite often say to people when, you know, people, obviously, Frank Taylor's served dental practice, and we sort of say to them, sometimes it's really good to have someone in the middle because it acts as a translator. Yeah. You know, you want to say something because you're really pissed off about something. So we then translate that into less aggressive terms.
Yeah, I think how that would be. Really
it doesn't
helpful.
Have to be a broker, but I think the answer is it's quite good to have an independent because actually then you can almost vent at that person and then that can be communicated. I think it is. Yeah. It's a translator, we call it. Yeah.
It's just a stressful time, isn't it? You know, if you think about buying a house, that's stressful. Doing any sort of big transaction like that is going to be stressful.
Mm. So what's the profile of the practice look like? What are the income streams you've got there?
So when we took over, it was running at about a 75% NHS to 25% private split. And there were four surgeries, of which we were only running at capacity for two surgeries a day.
Wow.
So that was part of the reason of taking over. We could see that there was probably scope to grow. When we took over, neither of the principals were working there, whereas I was going to be working there. Mm-hmm. So
makes
more
a difference.
Sort of feet on the ground, so to speak. So it looked like a viable business, even with COVID in the background. And we've just spent the last 2 years increasing sort of how many of the surgeries are full. And we're not fully up to capacity. I'd say we're going to be sort of up to three and a half, if you were to average it through the week, surgeries a day now. And when get to four, hopefully, you know, then I'll be happy then. Really.
To be honest, I think coming out of the back of COVID, I think you've done an incredible job. So
I think you've been really lucky.
Yeah. So you've owned a business now for a couple of years. What's that process taught you? What you learn in those 2 years?
Don't do it, but then I'm doing it again. So any
I was going to say, don't do it, says the guy who's just building a new practice down the road.
Of course it took me.
Stay your body.
It's very, very stressful, and it is a time sponge. I really miss, you know, I was always the type of person, I ran a really tight ship at work. I was done early every day. All my patients used to come early and they'd know I'd see them. And I'd be out the door as soon as that full stop was done on my last notes. I'd pick up my bag and I'd be gone. Always pre 5 o'clock. It was a joke, you know. If people saw me past 5 o'clock, they're like, you're gonna turn into a pumpkin now, because it was like a Cinderella thing. But now, you know, you might see me there 3 hours after I finish work, still just pottering around doing bits. And it just sucks up all of your time. And you come home, and obviously if you've not got kids, you've not got kids, but we have got kids. You do all the kids stuff, you have your dinner, and then you've got to turn your brain back on most nights and do more admin. But, you know, I'm sure that will eventually stop, but certainly in the first 2 years we've had it, and it has got better. That first 6 months was the worst, and then the first year, you know, another 12 months after that was still a lot. But now it is settling down, but obviously I've started again, so.
And is that, obviously, Lara's your wife, business partner, you know, working with you on the new project. How do you split that out to make sure that, you know, you kind of have that time together as a family? You're not always talking about business. You know, you're not both working in the evening. Not one of you is always working in the evening. You don't get time together. Is that quite challenging?
Yeah, I don't have the answer for that, because I think our split probably isn't right at the moment, but it is what it is. You know, hopefully there's light at the end of the tunnel. Like I say, Cowbridge has got a lot better. It almost runs itself now. We've got a good practice manager on board. And yeah, I know we're starting again, but that's our own fault, really, isn't it? We knew what we were getting in for.
Yeah, I think it is tricky, isn't it? We've sort of said sometimes to couples, you know, what you should try and do is almost book appointment times when you sort of talk about business. But it is tricky, because unless you're super disciplined, it sort of like leeches out, you know, Sunday morning when you're having a walk down the park or something. Yeah. About and it's like, oh, try and be, you know, husband and wife or whatever it is, and then do business partners when you can. But it is tricky, there's no doubt about
it's all consuming.
Have a like a scheduled meeting once a month. We use a business consultancy firm, the James Brosson Consultancy, and we do a timetable sort of 2 hours a month where we go through the cash flow and sort of how the business is doing. That's been really good. Like when we took over, we had no idea how to run a business, and they've really helped.
I think if you don't know, I think the great thing of having that is a brilliant one for people to listen about, the fact of you need to have a meeting to understand. You need to understand your numbers, don't you?
Oh yeah.
And how it all works, because otherwise it all sort of like blends into one, really. And I think that's a brilliant move to have said, actually, I need someone to sit down, because it's so important. Because otherwise the danger is you sort of flog your guts out, and then
you don't quite
know what you're financially doing. But at least if you've got the number, I think, what's that grip, isn't it? When you talk about grip, it's having the grip on your numbers. I think it's really important. Really good idea. Really good idea. Did you think about that, Nathan?
More appreciation now of sort of the numbers that need to, like the money that needs to come in to make the business viable. And, you know, myself and Lara, we didn't take any money out of the business in the first 12 months at all. We just relied on, like, I still had my other job and Lara still had her other job, and that's sort of what kept us personally afloat. And we're still not really taking any money out of it now, but we do take some out now. But, you know, I think if people think that they're going to take over a dental practice and they're going to be earning, I don't know what people want to earn, you know, 100,000 a year, you know, fair play to them if they can make that happen in the first few years, but certainly I found it incredibly difficult to make it make money.
Right, yeah.
What and made you engage Jane?
Jane and
was
John's
it you?
Help, we wouldn't have been viable at all right now. You know, they took one look at our prices and said, look, you are going to go bankrupt if you don't do something.
Yeah. Did you decide to engage her, or did she sort of like, was it some marketing you saw? How did it sort of, you end up?
No, so
that
I engaged
decision?
Her actually. I'd listened to her speak a lot on online. You know, during COVID, people had a lot of time to listen to other people speak, didn't they? And listen to lots of, you know, webinars and things like that. And yourself, Andy, I listened to you a lot as well. And I reached out to her then, actually.
It's good.
That's good.
It's another lesson for people listening.
Yeah, it's good that you've got a good understanding of what's going on. And, you know, you kind of described what sounds like an all-consuming, quite hard start to ownership. And then when we met at the Mastermind conference a little while ago, we had dinner together in the evening. You were telling me about your next project, which is you're setting up a squat dental practice not a million miles from your original one, which is, for me, is fascinating because it's an NHS-based practice as well. So talk us through how that came about and where's that project up to now?
Yeah, that is interesting.
So, NHS one, yeah. As you mentioned, most people are falling out of love of NHS dentistry, myself included. Okay. I don't like, in this separate, we're in Wales, so I don't like the way the Welsh contract has gone. It's really separating out, you know, what I think patients need from what the government is willing to pay for. But that's a discussion for a different time. But people are handing contracts back, and NHS dentistry, it doesn't make loads of money, but I'm not the type of person that wants loads of money. I just want a happy life. And the opportunity came up. A contract had been handed back in Bridgend, and it was out to tender with the health board. And it came with sort of a small setup grant that we thought might cover some of the costs. Costs are spiraling, as they do, but that's by the by. We did, and I was tempted to go for it, and I was like, oh, shall I, shan't I? And Lara sort of talked me out of it. I was like, oh, okay, we won't go for it. But I'd sent it to a friend of mine. He was like, oh, come on, let's do it. And I was like, oh, Paul wants to do it with us, La. She was like, oh, really? just settling down in Cowbridge, you know. And I was like, it's a really good opportunity to own a second practice. And, you know, then once you've got a second practice, we'll be able to work there part-time. It's sort of not all our eggs in one basket. And she was like, oh, all right, well, let's apply. We might not get it. So we filled it. It's quite a lot of work to apply for an NHS tender. In Wales, it's the same sort of portal you'd use if you're applying to make a motorway, I think. It's, and some of the questions are quite obscure when you put them in the context of dentistry, and you're sort of ticking something yes, and you're like, well, I don't even know really what this is.
What have I just ticked?
It's regarding something that's totally unrelated to a dental practice. But anyway, we did that, and we got through to interview, and we interviewed, and the interview did go really well, don't get me wrong. It was tough. They sort of grilled us a bit, and I was like, oh, I think we probably got that. You know, it was really good. Lara and Paul, far more pessimistic than me. They're like,
don't tell me that. Now you're contracted.
It was like the timeline was you should hear by the, I don't know, the 23rd of November. And over 2 weeks had gone past, and they were like, oh, we must not have got it. I was like, well, I think we interviewed really well. I still think we've got it. They were like, it's 2-3 weeks past when we should have heard. I was like, I know, but the health board runs on their own time.
This is the NHS,
And then we got the confirmation. They were like, oh, yeah, you interviewed really well, and the contract's yours if you want it. I was like, right, there we are, we've got it. Luckily, that was lucky, but also I had a patient who is an optician, and he was retiring, and he had he owned a building in the centre of Bridgend, which is exactly where the contract needed to be. And I knew the building was up for sale because I've spoken to him about it. We had a good patient-dentist relationship. I knew quite a lot about his business. And I knew he was shutting it down completely. He'd sold all his stock. And then I saw his building was going up for sale. And I said, oh, look, Rob, I'm really interested in buying your building. And that he was like, yeah, it's yours if you want it. I'd actually engaged with him a little bit before we knew the contract was mine. I said, look, Rob, that building would be perfect, but I don't know. And because he was in optometry, he was like, look, I know how the health board can be. I'll stop having viewings until you hear from the health board, which was obviously really kind
That's
of him.
Brilliant.
Yeah. So he held that building while we were waiting out for the decision. And then that actually did go really quickly. You know, a 3-month building move is pretty quick, I think. And then so we got the contract, got some of the money for the grant. The rest we're still waiting on. That'll come once we're open. That obviously helped a bit. And then we had personal investment from myself and Lara, and then the other partner, Paul and his wife, Nat. And well, the building work is getting on, but costs have spiraled out of control. And I think if anyone was thinking of setting up a squat, you need double the amount of money that you initially think.
Yeah. Yeah. You're talking about luck again, there is a formula for luck, and it's opportunity plus being prepared. Yeah. It was lucky. And as you described the things, you know, you have looked for opportunities, but also you've been prepared. So like with the optician, you know, you knew what you were looking to do. So yes, you're going to end up with somebody right in the center of town, but you pieced together.
Identified it before.
Yeah, you pieced together various elements that you knew were going to work in your favor. What's intriguing is you said
go to a casino with him.
Yes, you said, you know, lots of dentists are falling out of love with the NHS. I've you know partly fallen out of love with the NHS myself. Yet you're still very loyal to the NHS, and you have an NHS contract in Cowbridge, and you've won a new tender to deliver a contract in Bridgend, which arguably is probably a higher need NHS area than Cowbridge, just because of the demographics. Why are you staying loyal to the NHS?
I enjoy doing dentistry and I enjoy looking after people. You know, like I said a minute ago, it's not about the money. Obviously, I need money to live. That's how the world goes round, and the business needs to function and pay the staff. But I do genuinely enjoy delivering dentistry. There are parts of dentistry I do not enjoy doing paperwork, writing notes. You know, they're boring to me. They have no appeal. But meeting people, speaking to people, helping people who want to be helped mainly, that does make my, you know, that's what I like about the job. And NHS dentistry, you get that. I like seeing kids. I know people think I'm crazy, but I like seeing child patients, and you're very unlikely to see those. I know some private practices do see kids, but you're less likely to see that proportion of kids if you don't have an NHS contract.
Yeah. And I think in that context, the impact you can have on younger people generally.
I say educationally,
in school or whatever, if you can instill good oral hygiene techniques and the importance of it in kids, then hopefully they'll then live a life with great teeth and great oral health.
Delivering family dentistry is really rewarding. Like if you can see, you know, when you've been working at somewhere for a prolonged period of time, you might be seeing three or four generations of the same family. Yeah. Well, you know, you're looking after them their whole life then, really. And easy's the wrong word. It doesn't make your life easy. It just makes it enjoyable. You know, you can talk about things that about the other family members and things like that. And the patients are very at ease.
I sent you... You feel a real part of your community. Some of my wife's family live in Cowbridge. They still live in Cowbridge. So yeah, I think John's, which is on the high street, I think many years ago, her uncle used to own a few shops on the high street. And it's always struck me as a place that is a very strong community.
It is,
people know one another. And I guess you as being part of that community is quite important. And seeing the kids and the parents and grandparents means that you're an important part of that town.
Yeah, it definitely is. And you know, a lot of people used to tell me, oh, I wouldn't work too close to where you live. You know, you see them down the shops and stuff, but that doesn't bother me in any way. You know, if a patient sees me out and about, just I'll come and say hello. It's fine.
Yeah.
I take my kids
it's sort of old school dentistry, isn't it, really?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's old school dentistry being part of the community, like the lawyer used to be part of the community and the bank manager used to be part of the community. It's fascinating, really.
Yeah. So for all the tours and troubles and blood, sweat and tears that have gone into it, if we could wind the clock back, would you have stayed an associate or would you do it again?
I would have stayed an associate, I think, at least for 5 years. I certainly wouldn't be complicating my life with business ownership until you know what you're doing dentistry-wise. And that it takes time. You know, you don't come out – well, you certainly don't come out of dental school – and you don't come out of foundation training ready. You're much better when you come out of foundation training, but it takes you another couple of years to sort of, to have seen most things that will walk through the door. Otherwise, on a daily basis, you're seeing something for the first time and that's stressing you out. You don't need the added complication of looking after staff and a contract and a building and all the things that go with that.
When did you squeeze in your PG cert in orthodontics?
Yeah, I sort of fell into that last year. So I wanted to do that in 2021 because they were running it in Cardiff then, and I'd looked at it. But the first weekend date was the due date of our second child, Elodie. And Lara was like, absolutely not. You're not doing this course. I was like, right, okay, put that on the back burner. And then we went a year later, we went to the BDA show and the course was there. And I was like, oh, I really wanted to do your course last year, but it just didn't fit in with my plans. Are you running Cardiff again? He was like, oh, no, we're not running Cardiff anymore. And actually, this might be the last one we run for a while, this London course next year. I was like, right. I really wanted to do it. It's Kef Tactics, okay? That's what it's called, the course. And I was like, right, just bite the bullet, just do it. So I've been away in London quite a lot last year doing my PG cert in ortho. But the guys running that course, Raj, he's absolutely amazing. If anyone's looking for an orthodontic course, it has been fantastic. And like the after course help, just like one-on-one chats like this online, he'll look through cases with you. Second to none. Honestly, it's been amazing.
Brilliant.
That's good to hear. That's really nice to hear. And yeah. I think that after support is quite important, isn't it? Because I think lots of things that you learn in the moment, until you start applying it, it never really becomes a learnt experience. I often talk about people when you have driving lessons, you know, in the morning, you're not qualified. You have your test. An examiner says, now you are. And by the afternoon, you're in a car on your own. Nothing changed in those few hours. You don't have any experience. And I think it's lots of things in life. Until you've built up a body of experience, you're not truly competent. So it's nice to hear that there's that kind of follow-on support. What does success look like for you? Hard question, I know.
Yeah. Success for me would be being able to probably work four days a week and having a day off, where I didn't actually do any dentistry, including like admin and looking at cases.
Totally
dental free. Even half a day doing that would be nice. A week.
How old are your children, Nathan?
They're just about to turn four and two, and two next week.
Right, okay. So, spend more time with him.
He's actually, just before I came on to you, it was his first day in year one today. So,
ooh, oh, wow. Exciting.
Dropped him up to the bus, yeah. But yeah.
That's it.
It is hard balancing two young kids and two businesses. You know, I wouldn't recommend doing them all at once, but we did, and it can be done, but it's hard. The best and worst thing was when we took over the first practice, Lara was actually on maternity leave. For some of it, and all right, it was she wasn't on maternity leave. She was officially on maternity leave from clinical dentistry, but she was not on admin leave from practice ownership. That's for sure. And it did that ruin her maternity leave? Possibly a little bit. And she would probably openly say that. But definitely having that time to do admin was. Meant helped. That I could be at work full time, and she could do the sort of back end.
Mm. I think there's a kind of a fundamental flaw in dentist owned practices when they talk about work, and you nearly said it, and you then adjusted it at the end when you said about not working, and you then said not just clinical but also admin. And I think dentists very often when they talk about work, that's holding a handpiece. If they're not holding a handpiece, that's not work. So they almost don't begrudge the Thursday night admin or the Sunday morning treatment planning. That's almost not seen as part of the job. The job's when you're in the surgery. And I think being able to accept it in totality and giving yourself truly time off so you do have evenings to yourself and, you know, not slipping into doing admin isn't an easy thing to do, but it can be done. But I think it needs to be worked on over a period of time.
Definitely.
I totally agree. And the work hours just creep up and up and up when you've got practice ownership. Like I say, I used to walk out of work and I'd not even think about it again. I'd managed to get everything done in my working day when I was an associate because I could, if a patient didn't turn up, that was enough time to do my work admin. That just doesn't exist anymore.
Right, yeah.
There's always something.
So I guess your skateboarding career has taken a back seat.
Terrible. Terrible.
With everything else, it's hard to get away, I guess.
Yeah. No, it's been worth it. And you know, my dad is one for an easy life. You know, he's like, why do you keep getting so stressed and drop some commitments? And I'm like, I know, Dad, but you know, we're working towards something that hopefully by the time I retire will mean that I can maybe retire a little bit early, enjoy the kids when they're sort of teenager. I don't know. Yeah.
And you have to try and get that balance right. You have to get that balance right. That's the most important thing. So is that you can actually spend time now working your plan, so is that you do get your time off. Otherwise, the danger is when you do get your time off, no one will actually want to see you.
I must admit, I'm pleased to hear that having another couple as business partners in Bridgend is going to certainly share that load as well.
Yeah.
It won't put quite such a responsibility on you and Lara. To run that, and you've got experience that you can bring to the party. That the couple you're working with, is this their first time into practice
ownership?
It's their
first time,
Right, okay, so you can kind of mentor them through it as well, which will be lovely.
Define the roles. I think that would be my
yes.
Paul's going to be there full time as well, so that's really good. Like even down in Cowbridge, me and Lara aren't there full time at the moment, so it would be good to have one of the principals 5 days a week in Bridgend.
Yeah, brilliant.
Yeah. I just think from a culture point of view and a leadership point of view, I think if you're there all the time, it's much easier to drive things forward. If you're not, people don't kind of set out to work against you, but things just do slip a bit if you're not present.
We're fairly slack at work. Even when me and Lara are there in Cowbridge, we let the girls get away with some stuff. So
I was going to say, both of you strike me as fairly easygoing, you know, affable people. So I don't think the whip gets cracked that often, I'd have thought.
He's a surfer, man.
Yeah, exactly.
You probably could do with being whipped slightly, but you know, if the staff are happy.
Let's just talk about HR rules here.
The vibe in the practice is everything, right?
Exactly right. And I think it's very easy to pick up on small things that really upset and hurt people and add no value. You away from the bigger stuff that you're trying to achieve. If people are happy, they'll deliver great patient care and they'll stay longer. If people aren't happy, we talked about kind of, you know, one of the things we look at if we value practice is the retention of team. And when you see a schedule of people that work in a business and they've all been there 3 months, 4 months, 9 months, you're like, there is something fundamentally wrong with the leadership. When you see people have been there for 5 years, 7 years, 11 years, there's something good about why people want to stay. And I think if you can create an environment where people want to stay, that's great for the business. That's great for the business.
Yeah, no, we're like, since we've taken over, we've had a few staff leave, but not many really. It's a good stable team now. Mainly we've taken new ones on just because of growth. And then someone's been off on maternity leave. But yeah, a good team is everything.
And team self-select, I think we've found over the years that the environment you create, and people will either select to stay or they will select to go if they don't like the environment, you know. And not the fact that it's a toxic environment, but sometimes people just don't gel. And that you end up, down the line, you end up with a really good team. And then the hardest bit then is recruiting people to fit in with that team, isn't it?
We've been really lucky. We've taken on a lot of trainee nurses through the schemes. They're staggered across the 2 years. One of them actually finishes next month. But it's been really good taking them on because we had the core staff we had were really good, the nursing staff. They've taught the trainees that way of doing it. So everyone works together. And I'm not saying that taking on a trained nurse wouldn't be great because they come in ready to do everything. There's no learning curve. But they do it their way, which might not be the practice way. And I think they can ruffle a few feathers sometimes when some nurses can be quite stubborn, shall we say.
Nathan, we always finish up the same way. We've got a couple of questions that we'd like to ask you. The first one is, if you could be a fly on a wall in a certain situation, when would that be and where would you be? Who'd be there?
So I put quite a lot of thought into this question because I knew it was coming. And I touched on it earlier about how Wales and England were different now in their NHS contract delivery. And I would like to have been a fly on the wall in the meeting where contract variation was decided for Wales, because it is utter rubbish. And I need to know what happened in that meeting. I just need to. You know, since that came out, I've done everything I can to sort of fight it. I've joined the local dental committee. I sit on a government work stream. And I go to local cluster meetings for doctors, dentists, and all allied health professionals. And I still just, I just can't see how it works. I don't know.
Yeah. That'd be an interesting room to be in.
Yeah. When you find out the answer, let us know.
Yeah. And our follow-up question is, if you could meet somebody, who would you like to sit down and have a glass of wine, cup of coffee, pint of beer with?
So this is more of a fun one. I don't know if you guys are big in the points game, in sort of the credit card miles and hotel points game, but there's a website called Head for Points. I don't know if any of you follow it. It's a blog site. And I've been a follower for years and years, and I've redeemed probably well over 1 million airline points at least. But there used to be a commenter. He's not affiliated with the site at all, but with the handle Genghis. But I think he's had some kids and he doesn't comment anymore, but he knew every single point loophole you could possibly imagine. And I just need to pick his brain.
Wow.
So we need to find Genghis, the point loophole kid.
I guess that's not his actual name.
No.
Just his handle. But no. Yeah.
Not many people call
Genghis. I don't know if any of you guys like Avios and airline points and things like that.
I think I might have signed up for
that. It's a big hobby for me.
And they send you loads and loads of emails, if that's the one I think it is. And in the end, I unsubscribed because it was like, oh, man. Yeah. I don't know if it's the same thing.
I'm not an email subscriber. I just log in each day. But they send you all the articles by email. That's why you get
sent. Yeah, it was like, man. So in the end, I just unsubscribed because I couldn't read them all.
I know that travel points are a massive thing in dentistry because obviously lots of dental practices are able to buy materials using, you know, corporate company cards and the points rack up at quite a level. And I know I've seen online there's been different chatter of when you should hop from one Amex card to another, you know, to get your companion ticket.
Yeah,
And you're right. If you play it well, I'm sure it can be incredibly lucrative.
When I had more time, and the rules were more relaxed, I used to change credit cards almost every 3 months.
Wow.
Just to get more points.
My personal credit cards, just to hit bonuses. They've cracked down on all that since COVID. There used to be loophole after loophole, and you could just accrue bonuses.
I'm familiar with kind of Air Miles and Avios, but I'd never thought that there was this whole sub world of people kind of sharing the loopholes to make it even better.
Wow.
It's one of the only, like in America, it's ridiculous, the points game out there. You know, if you read some of the American blogs, you think, oh, what am I even doing it for? It's worthless in the UK, but. Yeah.
Wow.
Credit card miles, they're a great hobby. You know, you're spending money anyway. It always upsets me when I've got friends and we go out for dinner and they pay on their debit card. That's like my pet hate. I'm like, you paid for something on your debit card. I can't believe it.
You're missing
it. Yeah, you should be getting something for it. Yeah.
But what I love is I think I don't know how many episodes we've done now, 120 episodes, something like that. We could do this for the next 20 years. We are never ever going to get somebody saying, I want to Genghis from Head for Points to be the person that I get to meet.
It's a one-off, I reckon. It is a uniqueness.
I love that, Nathan. Absolutely brilliant. Yeah. Go on, we'll let you go. Thank you very much indeed for your
thank
time.
Thank you for your time. Brilliant.
I think it's brilliant. And I'd love to hear more once it's all set up and up and running. We'll have to chat again and find out.
Well, if you come down, Andy, to visit your family in Cowbridge, pop in and see us.
Yeah, I will do. I'll do. I'd love to. Appreciate your time, Nathan. Send regards to Lara as well. Keep well.
Thanks very much. Thanks. Brilliant.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Dentology, where we discuss the business of dentistry. If you like what you heard, please do subscribe where you found this episode. That would be amazing. And also follow us on Instagram.